Good morning, everybody.
Greetings.
This is August 30th.
August 30th, 2021,
episode 225.
225 is a good number.
It's not bad.
I like that number.
I'll take it. Yeah. I'll accept it.
Yeah.
CK, look at that picture of CK.
I know. He looks just so good.
I don't know what you're drinking, but it should be a mint julep.
Yeah.
That's what I think. It's a dapper drink. But,
yeah, I realized that on Friday we got so excited about the robot birds and everything, we didn't even introduce ourselves.
Really?
Yeah.
People were confused the whole time.
I guess so.
Morning, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
Well, let's remedy that. I'll introduce myself twice.
Okay.
I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. The Center for Prophetic Imagination.
Why did you do that?
Because to make it for Friday.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm Daniel Wolpert, and I direct Mike at the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. Hi, Kathleen. Kathleen is here and maybe has to leave. Kathleen's also back from vacation. So...
Jim says Guten Morgen, which almost fits with the fact that CK is drinking, I mean, a Danish beer, not a German one, but still
warping
close enough.
Danish beer.
I don't know. Great. How do you warp a beer?
I don't know what that means, but it sounds good.
Sounds tasty.
So patriarchy is the theme this week, and this was actually suggested by a listener. Mm-hmm. So we do take suggestions seriously. We're happy about that.
Angry and ineffective suggestion we took not seriously.
I know.
We made t-shirts of it.
We did. Yeah. Hey, Sirius is also back from vacation.
Well, so these
people are getting in their last gasp summer vacations, right?
This is my look of like, I didn't even get vacation.
Before the EU shuts down, the EU is probably shutting down again today.
Oof.
Because we're such dumbasses here in America. But anyway, I thought that we could start this week by a fun little story, because we are tying this to Christian spirituality. And Ash had the little picture of the old guy up on the cloud. And
I'm actually kind of proud. Like, I make these usually, and I like this might be one of my more favorite ones. I don't know if I can show that. Let's see if I can kind of. Show that kind of somehow.
You can see
the cloud. You can see the dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's good.
So,
didn't mean to get rid of you.
That's fine. So this was back a number of years ago, and I was actually working on my book, The Collapse of the Three-Story Universe, Christianity and Age of Science. And I was in this class, and we had this guest person who was like the classic tall steeple pastor, liberal pastor. And, you know, it was funny because this guy, I mean, he looked the part, he sounded the part. It was just, you know, he was totally formed into that role. And I said, you know, this is this problem that even in liberal churches, they're still basically teaching this patriarchal vision where, you know, God is this old guy up in the sky. And this guy got really mad at me. And he was like, we don't teach that at our church. And I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever. And so then that night he went home, you know, we all went home. And so the next day he's back at class the next morning and he's like, we've got to talk about that thing about the old guy at the church. I was like, really? What happened? And so literally that night he went home and his son, who was in his early 20s, had a friend over who'd also grown up in the church. And they're sitting there at dinner and just like out of nowhere, I mean, this is one of these things that makes you want to believe in God, right? Out of nowhere, the kid says to him, hey, so are you still teaching that God is this old guy in the sky at your church? It just completely flipped this pastor out. And, you know, he realized like, oh, maybe that is the message we're still sending across. And I mean, this is one of the really challenging things, right? Is that even if you think you are not wedded to this patriarchal Christianity vision, you actually still are, because all the art all the music, all the liturgy, the architecture, the design of the layout in the service, everything points to patriarchy. And so even if you don't get up there and literally say, you know, God is this old guy in the sky, that's still the message that's coming across. And it's one of these, it sort of proves this point that we've been talking about so much, about how intellectually you can say or think something or, quote, educate in one way. But if there is this other formational piece happening, that's really what overrides everything.
Yeah, I think people think you have to say God is an old man in the sky for you to speak in them. But to me, it's like it's a normativity. It's like patrionormativity. I don't know what you call it. But like this idea that if that's something you can't ever transgress, then you know that's at the center of what you think. So try calling God she in a church. If people get upset, then they believe that God is fundamentally a he. Even if you never say that, you never say, I believe as a creedal statement, God is a he. If you say she and they get upset. I've never had people get as upset at me as when I said, well, that may be not true. I've had lots of times people have got upset at me. And among the times when people got upset at me a lot.
So many times.
Was when I said Jesus is queer, which I actually believe in the non-metaphorical sense. Right. So,
right.
But it upsets people. Even a lot of queer people, even a lot of queer people who decided they aren't a Christian anymore, got upset that I transgressed. Yeah. So we have to be transgressive about this, or we can't really break the patriarchy. Because at the end of the day, like grown kids who feel like they can do whatever they want as long as they never cross their parents, you know, as long as they're still somehow obedient, well, they're not really fully matured as human beings. And that's what happens. We get stuck. We get this kind of patriarchal way of thinking about a religion where we think somehow we're free, except for when we'd have to disagree with dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, this patriarchal system, which is very, very old, and you know, there's a lot of different discussion about, you know, have there been more matriarchal systems? Are there, you know, older tribal systems that are more female dominant? I mean, maybe there are some, but the patriarchy and patriarchal systems are just so prevalent worldwide. And become more and more normative as technology grows, as you know, these different economic systems grow, and then certainly, you know, once you get to colonialism and capitalism, I mean, those are things that absolutely bake in these patriarchal ideas, and then all of the social systems that form people. You know, so I was thinking about this a lot this weekend in terms of education, because we're starting the spiritual direction program this week. And a lot of, you know, what I've been thinking about is, well, yeah, I mean, how do you create an educational system and an educational program that is not fundamentally formed by this patriarchal dominated idea where you have the expert, you know, until recently, usually a man, a white man, you know, lecturing at you, giving you all this, the information, the correct information. And what education involves is just regurgitating the correct information. And then you get a little gold star and a pat on the head, and you move on to the next educational venue.
Well, and it's baked in on all sorts of levels. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up the, have there been societies that are not patriarchal? Yes, and there's a reason they're not as prevalent. There's something powerful about authoritarian systems that make them more effective at dominating the hell out of other people. So, so it's interesting. And this is why we got to tell the truth about our Christianity. We can all say Christianity started as an anti-imperial religion, and it's subversive, and its fundamental core, yet it's the most domineering and dominant religion that the world's ever seen. Mm-hmm. And so we can't say, well, that's not real Christianity. That might be an interesting existential puzzle to work on. But if the vast majority of human beings have experienced a domineering and authoritarian Christianity, it just becomes a way of dismissing their complaints to say, well, that's not real Christianity. And so this question of like, well, what do we do? Like, the Trinity, God the Father, Jesus the Son, and the Holy Spirit is like some sort of ghost. That even though the Spirit's some sort of ghost over there, we know it doesn't have a gender. If you call the Spirit a she, people get upset. Not if you call the Spirit a he. Jesus is a man. The relationship with the church is largely perceived as one of Jesus. I mean, this might sound like I'm sexualizing it, but there's a reason that Jesus impregnates the church and that the leaders go to seminaries, which are, it's a semen language. It's this, all this sort of very patriarchal sort of stuff. And so within it, we have to get real about, okay, if we want to subvert that and stay Christian, we have to ask ourselves, why do we want to stay Christian? If it's because we're afraid to let go of it because of punishment, then we're not being liberated from patriarchy. If we're afraid that if we feel like we have to obey it primarily as our primary relationship with it, and so we're only willing to tweak a little bit of it, then we're going to still be baked into patriarchy. If somehow we find something so powerfully subversive and we see this as a life-giving, there's life in the tradition and are willing to be transgressive with a lot of it and recognize the messiness of it and are still willing to tell the truth, then there's some promise there. But I feel like it's really hard to get people to that point. Comments are coming in.
Yep, great comments coming in.
James writes, I get this as a problem. I can use gender-inclusive language for God in the church I pastor. I can say she for God, and more often I just try to use safe gender-inclusive language. For example, God or God's self. But I'm still a dude standing up there saying these things.
Mm-hmm. No.
You know, that's an interesting thing. Like, to me, it's, you're right. Like, if you have a white man saying things in the pulpit, it will reinforce the domination of white men just by the visual of it. At the same time, I mean, it's good to recognize that structurally, but at the same time, we still have, at some point, we have to have white men saying this stuff and being transgressive about patriarchy because we have a lot of white men in these positions. So it's good to own the tension of that. And it's a challenge. Ceres writes, the patriarchal Christianity is cemented just by the way Mary Magdalene was treated throughout church history, destroying the relationship between Jesus and Magdalene for all eternity.
Yeah, I mean, Mary and, and all the women figures throughout the Bible, and, maybe a number of you on here are very aware of this great new work that's come out. Will Gaffney's done the Women's Lectionary, where she's trying to center other voices and other stories. Women in the Bible have always been treated as very second-class citizens, largely even ignored. That's seriously problematic.
Mm-hmm. No true Scotsman is true. That's referring to that fallacy that, like, you can Google it. I don't even know if I can explain it very well right now. I like how you capitalize man as a pun there. It's well done. Yeah. Gregory writes, all this stuff is part and parcel of the same matrix of oppression. Drill down deep enough into any type of oppression, we'll begin to see its connection to other forms of oppression.
Yeah.
And this isn't, I'm glad you bring that up, because I'm in all sorts of conversations, and there's a lot of people out there that want to think about oppressions as a stacked layer. And so at the bottom is patriarchy. And that then there's other oppressions that are built on top of it. And that if we could just pull out patriarchy like some sort of game of Jenga, it'll all topple. Which it's more of a web than a Jenga tower. So I find that very frustrating when I encounter that sort of thinking. But at the same time, like, you can really make a good case that patriarchy is the father of oppressions. And you can see the way it, like, it definitely creates this idea of there being a class of dominant versus subordinate hierarchy, mm-hmm. like, at a basic family level or tribal level, clan level. And then you see how that kind of way of thinking permeates everywhere. And so, and then it's like the offspring of patriarchy. So we've got to name things like not different kinds of sexisms, gender essentialism, mm-hmm. heteronormativity, all ableism. Sorts of ableism, yeah. All these things about that have this idea that at the dominant, purest form, the best kind of human being is this powerful, able-bodied man. Now, we can also then add things like white and Christian and stuff to that. But really, it starts with this idea of the dominant masculine type figure with a bunch of assumptions to that. And then anything is lesser than. And so then if you violate that, so I, at some point, we're going to probably go into this with more detail, but I came out as genderqueer and non-binary in July, I think. I don't know, sometime in the last month. And that's transgressive. Like, that upsets people. Even if I don't do anything with it, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. even if I'm technically okay, yeah. according to the Catholic Church with it, which, you know, like,
yeah.
it transgresses things and upsets yeah. people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that's another example of this business of, you know, people say they're not doing something or they say they're fine with something. Well, just test that out by, you know, using another pronoun or, you know, using another picture or something. And then this emotionality comes out. And you're like, ah, see, you're not really okay with this. And, you know, and that's the very, you know, it's very similar to a lot of the discussion that's going on now about what's happening in America of, well, you know, America used to be nice, or America used to be undivided. Well, used to be according to who or for whom? Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start drilling down a little bit on that, you're like, well, no, actually not really. But, you know, we want to sort of pretend that everything is fine until you have somebody from somewhere else, or you use some other kind of language, or you do something else to try to upend something. Well, then you notice what all the problems are.
Yeah, just to say just a tiny bit more about that, because this is fascinating, because this just shows the lies of Christianity. I have been told and taught and grew up within the evangelical church, the big issue is, like, some people are born gay. It's if they do gayness, that's a problem. It's about doing the sin, right? So at the same time I came out as genderqueer, I also came out as pansexual. Me being willing to have sex with all kinds of different people theoretically didn't bother people. The thing that bothered them was that, like, my somehow gender identity shift. And that shows, like, that isn't about sin then to people. It's about me violating the sacredness of gender, which isn't even really spelled out that deeply in. It's assumed but never explicitly named in scripture. This is what it means to be a man. And if you don't do this, you're bad. So it shows, like, okay, somehow Christianity is being used to reinforce this ideal of manhood. And we're mm-hmm. saying that we're trying to maintain what is holy, but really we're using the holy, as we understand it, to maintain these power structures. And so it reveals the nature of modern Christianity as a way of upholding dominating power systems. And so it's a bait and switch. So that's why Christianity needs to be subverted. And we have to question our relationship with power and what, how we imagine things when we think about God. C.K. writes, the need for paternalism, or parentalism, I should say, subverts independence.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot we can say about that. But let's keep going through the comments. Maybe we'll circle back around to that. Joseph writes, I heard a Potawatomi elder show an old black and white picture of his grandfather as a young man. He said, my grandfather was a great chief. Then he showed an old photo of several very old women. He said, these are grandmothers. Do you want to know how he became chief? The grandmother said, you're a chief. If he did not behave well as chief, the grandmothers would say, you're no longer chief. That is one way matriarchy can work.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Catherine writes, the idea that the most popular forms of atonement theology in the United States lend themselves intensely well to authoritarian patriarchy and racism is still a really tough thing to bring up, even in most quote-unquote liberal mainline churches. It definitely took me years to accept the truth in that, and that there were other ways to practice Christianity. Mm-hmm. And this is the war work you bring up.
I mean, I'm glad you bring that up, Catherine, because because that's one place, you know, an atonement theology, right? So this is the Jesus died for our sins, and you know, the Father had to kill the Son in order to make the Father feel better about
to maintain his honor as the head of the family.
I mean, it really, you know, it's sort of the most perverse thing you could kind of come up with. But, you know, God kills God's self to make God's self feel better about something. You know, but that particular atonement theology and image and idea, right, which is the classic patriarchal thing, you know, it's like, well, wait till your father comes home. You know, you've misbehaved. Wait till dad comes home and he's going to kick your ass and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is and you're right that at least as much as he pronouns for God is so embedded in every Christian church. And when you start, you know, suggesting that there's other ways to understand what's going on with Jesus, that there's other ways to understand about why he was killed and what's happening. Yeah, I mean, people would completely freak out. And you know, and I really think that, I mean, until we start grappling with all, and that's why I say you don't have to have a picture of an old white guy in the sky for everybody to get that idea that that's what you're teaching, because it's embedded in all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Even the idea of, like, it's hard for people to imagine how can you motivate people towards Christ-likeness or Christianity if you remove negative motivation.
Which
parents deal with this all the time. Like, how can I get my kid not to spend all this time on the screen unless I threaten him somehow to take something away and make him feel bad? I mean, it's a very understandable challenge to have, but it becomes really problematic when it's enshrined as sacred. CK writes, the only archy is anarchy. Yeah.
All right.
James writes, I used to have we, our as my pronouns on Twitter, the royal pronouns, but also I liked how inclusive they were. And it still upset white conservative people, even though I wasn't actually making a gender statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm messing with the he, him. Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gregory writes, all language is limited. That's for sure. But if our language is fueled by a just and liberating vision for all people, families, and tribes of the earth, we can speak peace to and with one another. Yeah, again, like, this is, I understand people are going to make mistakes and it's confusing and hard. No one likes to be corrected on how they're saying things because it's embarrassing and can be disruptive and confusing, all that. But the idea that somehow even English language is sacred, like when I say they, them as my pronouns, which is what I want, I people will be like, well, that's not how the English language works. I'm like, it's always kind of worked that way. Their, you know, chat or whatever, but it's like somehow there's some moral transgression that happens. If you, let's say that they, them was only ever used as a plural pronoun, which is not true. I mean, you can read, there's all sorts of stuff where you can see Dickens and, you know, Emily Dickinson and stuff using they, them pronouns. And we do it naturally all the time in our society when we're not thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it wasn't, like, okay, so what?
Right.
Why is that sacred? Why do you have to lean towards some sort of authoritarianism in order to maintain this system? Christians Against Christianity by Aubrey Hendricks. That's a new book that I think within the last year, right? It came out.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Good recommendation.
Definitely read that one. A lesser, I'm not just being falsely humble here, but I wrote a book called On Kingdom that gets at some of this. definitely check out that one because it seems like it's really engaging a lot of stuff. But Unkingdom is also worth checking out. At least it was my 7 years ago attempt or 8 years ago attempt at trying to get at patriarchy. Interesting to rewrite it now. Susan writes, change is never easy. Exposure to other perspectives helps if you're willing to be changed. I see you shaved off your beard, Ash, and I'm finding that is taking some getting used to. Humans are complicated. As for patriarchy, if only it could just go away. I mean, I would love it if it go away. Yeah, I wish we could shave it off like my beard.
By the way, that would be so nice.
The beard thing, I'm growing it back. It's not like this is just part of, I mean, every once in a while I have to shave and see how nubby my face looks. You know,
like, nubby.
It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know if I like it. So I'll probably grow it back. Cynthia writes, what if the church became the groom of Christ instead of bride? Would that upset the patriarchy or show how sexuality is baked in through how we pretend to ignore it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the really funny thing to me about all of this in reference to the church is how the way the Trinity is talked about and the way that the church is talked about, it's totally homoerotic, right? I mean, it's all guys, you know, and so it's very funny to me how you have all of this sexual language that's going on, and then people are trying to ignore and repress sexuality. People are trying to pretend that they're not who they actually are. You've got all these moral codes against this. And how then that becomes the sole focus of sin. Actually, Gregory had this great comment on Facebook this morning. You know, if your only sin is about what's happening in the bedroom and not what's happening in the boardroom and the schoolroom and the classroom and all these other rooms, then there's something really wrong with your Christianity. And it's very clear that, you know, a big part of the problem with patriarchy and what patriarchy is dealing with is problems and confusions around sexuality, right? And of course, you know, it's connected to economic systems because women are the one that have babies, and so they need to be controlled, and you need to control whose property, you know, the babies are, and where you pass stuff down to. And so you make women property, and then it's like, well, what if women just want to have sex? And well, that's dangerous because then who are they having babies with? And, you know, I mean, there's all of this stuff that men get incredibly distressed about. And then it sets up these systems of control. Right. And that's one of the ways that patriarchy gets up and running. And so dealing with the issues of our sexuality and what we're interested in and what we do and don't do and want to do and don't want to do is very much a part of all of this. And, you know, maybe as the week goes on, we'll talk more about that as well.
Yeah. And there's a, yeah, this, even thinking about the way we relate to God, and I'm glad you mentioned the homoeroticism, a lot of the mystics, St. John the Cross, like there's a lot of homoeroticism. And this idea of the bride of Christ, I'm glad you brought that up, Cynthia. Like, what if we're the groom of Christ? What if we, like, in my piece, maybe I should, next time I should read the thing I wrote a while back, but like, it would not be wrong to say that Jesus is in a polyamorous relationship with the sum totality of the body of Christ, right? What does it mean? Is it, can you, if, and again, people might think I'm being cute, but if I have invited Jesus inside of me, right, there's a sexual connotation to that. Just like in the book of Revelation where John on the Isle of Patmos says, come out of her, my people. That's a sexual connotation. If Jesus is somehow inside of me and then in him I live and move and have my being, there's a sense in which my relationship with God is sensual and sexual because it's part of my embodiment. What does it mean for me to have a sexual relationship with God? Is not some sort of cutesy. And the fact that it makes us uncomfortable shows how fucked up we are. Why is that uncomfortable? And if I'm in this sexual relationship with this risen Christ who is maybe was a dude and is now is risen. So what we think of as masculinity and femininity doesn't apply the same way anymore. Yeah. And that the more I love Jesus, the more I become like Jesus. That really has questions for what we think about as the essence of our sexuality and gender that we have to think about. Yeah. And we're too uncomfortable to even go there. Like if just the stuff I said isn't even barely scratching the surface. And that already freaks people out. So this question, partnerism. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I don't know.
Partnerism. Well, it's a paternalism, partnerism. Right?
I see.
So how would you get to that? And that's part of the transgressing, right? So, and this is where, I often bring up the issue of the architecture of a church, right? I mean, in so many churches, if you even propose, well, let's take out the pews and put in chairs and do worship in a circle, like even just that completely freaks people out. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I know there's one church here in St. Paul, one of the big Presbyterian churches up on Summit Avenue. I mean, they have the old style stone pulpit, like up in the sky, way up on the wall of the building. And if you're a guest preacher there, like they tell you, you have to go up there. I was talking to some people who were preaching there as a guest.
I'm like, well, thing, the weird little.
Yeah, you got to wear the thing. You got to wear the thing. You got to go up in the sky. I mean, you literally have to be the old guy up in the sky. And I said, well, what if you want to preach down on the floor? And they're like, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. Right. So even just, and this is where you were talking about embodiment a little bit ago. Right. So even where you put your body in the sanctuary is governed by this. And if you want to put your body in a different place, it terrifies people, right? And you get in trouble. So, it's great to start looking at all of this. All right, we got to wrap up here. We got a few comments. Yeah,
James writes, with your episode title, I picture John Piper dressed as Austin Powers. patriarchy is smashing, baby.
that's great.
Ellen writes, is it okay to call God mother by a Southern Baptist pastor is a great entry point for showing the biblicality of God's image being genderful. Yeah.
Okay. Is that a book? Call God mother. Okay. That's great.
That's a great line. I'm assuming everything we just said out loud is one great line.
Great line. Thank you.
Great books around patriarchy. It's Rayon Eisler. Okay. There we go. James writes, yes, famously Julian of Norwich referred to Christ as our mother. Yeah. I always just got to say this. I always think about having a restaurant where all the menu items are named after saints. And Julian of Norwich is a great name for a sandwich. I'm just going to say that. It's got to have pastrami, vegan pastrami in it. Tasty. James writes, Trinitarian theology talks about the mutual interpenetration of the Godhead.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which is orgiatic. Okay.
Well, let's just be real about it.
Yes. Okay. It's just properly orgiatic. CQ writes, it's this fucked up Freudian thing that predates Freud. Yeah. Michelle writes, I feel like if we had a more embodied understanding of spirituality, then maybe talking about sexuality wouldn't be so weird for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
this is the other thing. Yeah. Like, we always assume this is part of the myth of progress, that in the Middle Ages, they were more repressed than we are. That's not universally true at all. Just read some of that shit. Read the Canterbury Tales and and the Dicameron or whatever, all this stuff. Like, they haven't had the same hangups. They've had their own hangups.
No.
But we have more resources and riches than we want to even know about, because they're kind of kept from us, whether intentionally or through avoidance because of awkwardness. Daniel writes, even St. Jerome. Yeah. No left-wing activist to be sure. For sure. I mean, he's best known for wrestling against demons of lust in a cave alone, right? In his commentary, in Isaiah writes about the Holy Spirit as my mother.
No.
Here's a yes to something.
Thank you.
Victoria, I didn't come out of the closet. I came out of the cabinet like all other cans. Nice. Good pun.
Ha, ha, ha.
Nice. Ceres writes, what makes opposing toxic masculinity tricky is that we might have colonial classist assumptions on what makes toxic masculinity. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Way to bring the complexity, but it's true. Basically, we are unconsciously scapegoat cultures from manual labor or from artistic creatives, while suburban middle class and upper class men get away with toxic patriarchy. Yes.
Yeah,
it's instinctive.
All this is great stuff that we can get into as the week goes on.
Yeah, I'll hold my thoughts. Toxic masculinity. Ellen writes, don't forget the Julianne fries. I get it. Exactly again to something that we said. I'm assuming everything we said isn't exactly. Let's just assume that. James Wright, I think one of the challenges is that those of us who are beneficiaries of patriarchy hear challenges to patriarchy as you hate men, the way white dudes hear challenges to supremacy culture as you hate white people. Obviously, you do. I mean, because this is the thing. Masculinity, what even is it? How do we even define it if you remove it from the context of domination?
Right.
So of course, like if someone hates the patriarchy, they hate men because if you're a man, you're like, well, I don't know who I am apart from this. And it raises too many awkward questions. No. So we freak out. Gregory writes, Christopher Ryan's book, Sex at Dawn, and Dr. Eleanor Janega's book on medieval sexuality are mind-blowingly interesting.
Okay, great. Well, Gus doesn't seem to be on here today, but there's a lot of work for the librarian. You have these on the list. So, all right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, for the great comments. And we got more to come for the rest of the week. So we'll see you on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday, everybody. Thank you.